Why, yes, it is a Tuesday. Time to talk to Riley Gates. GoPowerCat.com does a wonderful job covering K-State athletics. He's our Wildcat insider. And K-State goes to West Virginia and wins again on the road last night after being worried that Dean Wade might be out for the season, Riley. I saw all the doom and gloom when K-State lost to Iowa State. Dean Wade's out for the season, or everybody feared the worst. And what do you know, just a few days later, he's out on the floor and K-State wins on the road. All is good in the world now, right?
Yeah, totally right. Just totally forget about anything that happened on Saturday. That's not a thing, yes. And we're just going to go from there.
It's kind of that's how it works, doesn't it? It's like when K-State lost to Iowa State, it's almost as if the fan base forgot they won nine in a row.
Yeah, you know, but isn't that kind of how fans work?
Yes.
You know,
yes.
You lose your first game in maybe a month, or in terms of Big 12 games, and suddenly the sky is falling and it's the end of the world. But I mean, it was tough to see the Big 12 winning streak come to an end, and to see it come to an end in such a crucial game for the Big 12 race. But I think that this was a situation where, like, you knew they were going to lose at some point, I guess.
Yeah.
And I guess if you got to have a loss, I guess it's better to have it happen, kind of get your focus back here before an easy week, and then prepare for a game at KU. But you're still maintaining that lead. Now you got a little bit of a scare last night, and I thought the lead might be going away, but you're game ahead of the rest of the pack in the Big 12, and you still control your own destiny, which is a position that a lot of people would really like to be in. And K-State and KU, I guess, are the only two that can say all they have to do is just win.
That's right, absolutely. K-State just 5 games left on their schedule, and it doesn't look super daunting, but I think the biggest key is, of course, health-wise. Of course, going to Lawrence seems daunting, but Baylor is home. You got to go to TCU. TCU just lost at Oklahoma State. TCU's had some problems recently at home. They lost to Oklahoma at home. So things look pretty promising. Let's get into the game from last night. You know, a lot of things stood out to me in this one. One, and Bruce Weber said it after the game, the experience of his team, been there, done that. I really didn't get the feeling at all that K-State was going to lose that game last night, because I've seen West Virginia play on 3 or 4 occasions, and I've seen how offensively challenged they are. And I feel for Bob Huggins and Josh Eilert and the guys down there, because you take away 4 or 5 of your best players off of any team in America, you're going to struggle. And they don't shoot the ball well. They've got a beast inside in Culver, who's going to be a stud, gave K-State problems last night. But one thing that was exposed last night, and we know this, we've known it all year long, and luckily there's not like a whole bunch of great big men in the Big 12, and hopefully if K-State, you know, when they make the NCAA tournament, they avoid a matchup like this. But that is the lack of size inside for K-State, and guys that just really don't add a lot when they're on the floor, other than they're just a body. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and I think it's kind of funny, because I wasn't really shocked that K-State struggled so much with those bigs coming off the bench and attempting to contribute. I'm going to put this as nicely as I can. Bruce Weber has recruited about 2 good big men in his entire tenure at K-State. One of those being DJ Johnson, who was 6'8" and was far from a big man when he stepped on campus. Luckily, he beefed up into that. I guess you can say Dean Wade, although I don't really consider him a true big.
Yeah.
And then I guess McCall Moline has been a decent addition. But he's really honestly been a very poor recruiter when it comes to landing big men that can contribute. And I really don't think it's just a lack of experience. I just think it's these guys aren't ready for this level of competition. And when we've seen that, we saw that on full display last night. Levi Stockard picked up 3 fouls in 2 minutes of action, and I think that's pretty impressive. I think it takes a lot of skill to pick up more fouls than minutes played, you know.
James Love was right there with him. It was a good race.
Yeah, you know, I think it was a challenge to see if you could get to the bench first. But, man, they were lucky that they were playing Texas Tech. They were lucky that they were playing West Virginia and not somebody like Texas Tech, not somebody like Baylor, who had bigs inside and could really cause some issues, because that could have easily resulted in a loss. But I think you saw, like you said, you saw a weakness of this team and something that could really come back to bite them in an NCAA tournament game and a Big 12 tournament game. And they got to get that problem figured out, or they got to get McCall Moline to stay out of foul trouble and be on the floor for nearly 40 minutes because they can't dip much into their bench when it comes to the bigs. But like, Austin Trice played the best minutes of any big man last night, I thought, and he wasn't on the floor for very much, and yet he's the guy that Bruce Weber doesn't really want to play. So I don't understand a whole lot of his substitutions with the bigs, but getting back to the question, yeah, it is a weakness. Without a doubt, moving forward.
Have you ever seen a Division One basketball player blow three dunks in a game?
No.
That was embarrassing.
No way.
Holy cow.
After you miss one, okay.
Yeah.
After you miss two, you're thinking, all right, I better go in for the layup. After you miss three, it's like,
yes.
I don't even know what to say anymore.
You're telling them to dunk it. Just go up and just drop it in there, for crying out loud.
Mm-hmm.
He's so lucky it was at West Virginia, because if that's a game in Lawrence, Bruce isn't as nice to McCall Maween as he was last night. That's for sure. I've never seen.
Yeah.
It's like he had the yips when it came to dunking. I have no idea what it feels like to do that, except on maybe a 7 or 8 foot goal. I've never seen anything like it. Okay, let's talk about the injuries. You know, Jada's out. We saw him with the cast or the protective covering on his left hand after he had his surgery. Wade was back last night. I think a lot of people thought he wouldn't be able to go 32 minutes or go at all. So update us on the injury front. What do you know about Wade, and what do we know about Jada in regards to time frame with Jada, and then Wade, how he felt after last night's game?
Well, clearly I don't know a whole lot about Dean Wade, because I'm not joking. I really thought for sure they would sit him in this one. It looked like a pretty bad injury. And obviously you're playing West Virginia, so I'm thinking, okay, what's the point of putting him on the floor? So I literally had a story ready to go saying that, you know, he will not play tonight. He's unavailable. And then about 6 o'clock, they get the news dropped that he's going to be available and he's probably going to start. So I quickly went in and changed that stuff. But I mean, it looks like he's fine. And I got to think that, you know, if he is playing significant minutes against West Virginia of all teams, and it's not like they put him in late, you know, oh, no, we're in trouble, we better go to Dean now. No, they started it.
Yeah.
So if he's playing significant minutes after an injury, I got to think he's fine. You know, he's probably still sore. He'll probably still walk around in a boot. But I would anticipate him being on the floor for Oklahoma State. KU, I mean, until something else happens, I would guess that he doesn't miss any more time moving forward. Cartier, it's really unclear, honestly. He was in a cast on Saturday, I know that, like a hard cast, and then someone said that I wasn't in Morgantown last night. We didn't make the trip, but someone said that they thought it was a splint. I thought it was a cast based on the few seconds I saw him on the TV. So I think that's pretty definitive of when he's going to be back. If it's still a hard cast, I wouldn't anticipate him being back before the Big 12 tournament or NCAA tournament. If he's in a splint, you know, who knows? Maybe he could be back by early March. But this is an injury that did not sound promising last week from everything Bruce Weber said. It sounds like it's going to be a pretty significant amount of time that he's out, which is unfortunate. I'll say this about it. It's fishy. Let's just define it as a fishy injury, because when I pressed him on the teleconference last week about it, he was very unwilling to say if it was basketball related or not.
Mm-hmm.
He could easily come out and just squash it and say straight up, you know, he could lie and say it was in practice, and nobody would be able to really fish for more information, because that's all you really need. He could be lying or tell the truth and just say, yeah, pretty freak accident outside of basketball, we're just not going to talk about it. That'd be fine, and the speculation would end, but the more he refuses to address it, the more speculation is going to come of it. Whatever it was, I don't anticipate him being back before the Big 12 tournament. And if we saw him in Kansas City, I guess I'd be kind of shocked, at least until we get some more information moving forward.
Yeah, that's too bad, because he was playing really good, really well. And then for that to happen, and like you said, if it was basketball related, they would have already said that. So it obviously
right.
is something that happened off the basketball court. And there's, of course, all kinds of rumors, and we're not going to go into that because we can't confirm any of it. But it is fishy. I agree with you. Riley Gates is our guest, our Wildcat Insider, brought to you by Hanson Auction Realty in Beloit and Heineken Electric Residential and Commercial Electric Service Company. So we look at the schedule. Oklahoma State coming up here on Saturday. K-State has that one at home. Oklahoma State won last night at home against TCU. Before we get into that game and the rest of the schedule, I've seen some talk now where people are starting to say, Barry Brown, why can't he be the Big 12 Player of the Year? And I would say, yeah, why can't he be? I know Dedrick Lawson with the numbers, all the double-doubles, he's certainly going to have a great chance to be the Big 12 Player of the Year. And maybe it might come down to who wins the Big 12, whatever the case may be when those people that vote. But Barry Brown is a complete player. You and I both know that. He's a tremendous defender. He's turned into a really good leader. And last night, even though, you know, if somebody didn't watch the game and they looked at his line, they'd say, oh, Barry Brown had a nice game. But if you watch the game, I thought he played fantastic. And when they needed a bucket, he got a bucket. The shot he made right before halftime was fantastic. His mid-range jumper, he didn't force stuff. He still trusted Mayween after two blown dunks to give him the ball for a third, which I don't think there was going to be a fourth, let me tell you that. But that's part of leadership, though, trusting in your guys. To, even though you messed up once, twice, or three times, I still believe in you. I think Barry Brown, no question, if K-State wins the Big 12, especially outright, he could very well be your Big 12 Player of the Year, and I think it'd be well-deserved.
Yeah, I was just about to say that. You know, the formula seems pretty simple to me. I think if Kansas State wins the Big 12, whether it's a share or outright, I think Barry Brown has to be the Big 12 Player of the Year, because it's clear that he has been the spark plug, whatever adjective you want to use to describe him, in this Big 12 championship run. And if they cap it off, I think he is undoubtedly the Big 12 Player of the Year. Now, if K-State doesn't win a share and it's somebody else, if it's KU, I think it'll probably be Dedrick Lawson, but I think you could still make a case for Barry Brown. Mm-hmm. It's just going to be really tough if they don't win the Big 12. So it'd be something that, like, it's cop-out, I know, but it's something that I have to wait and see, you know, how does the season end, who wins the conference, and who pushes their team over the hump. And if it isn't K-State at the end holding up any sort of trophy, then I'd really sit down, I'd you know, study the numbers, really kind of make a educated decision. But I feel pretty comfortable in saying that if K-State wins the Big 12 championship, my vote would go to Barry Brown. Of course, if they trusted me with the vote, they don't trust me with the vote.
I think if K-State wins it outright, Barry Brown, I think, has a great chance to win it. I think if they share it, I could see a cop-out somehow where it's a co-situation, maybe. Or if they share it, I could see Lawson still getting it because, of course, we know the whole history of KU and everything else. But I agree with you. I think Barry Brown, you consider all the intangibles and everything he brings to the table. I mean, he's got to be as strong a candidate as any. And I hope that whoever votes on this will look at the whole package. Don't get caught up in just the field goal percentage or just the statistics. Look at what this guy brings to your team.
Right. And unfortunately, I think if KU wins the Big 12, given all the situation that's happened with that program, on top of the fact that Dedrick Lawson averages a double-double, I think it's probably going to be pretty tough to fight him. But we'll see which way they go with that when the year comes to a close.
All right, so let's look at the rest of the schedule. Oklahoma State coming to Manhattan on Saturday. You would assume that's a win, but you never know. Oklahoma State's playing a little bit better. They beat TCU at home last night, although they have not been good on the road this year. At Kansas Monday, that's the big one, of course. And I think if you ask most K-State fans, they'll say, we're not going to win in Lawrence. We never do. I always come back with Jim Woldridge won in Lawrence. If that happened, anything's possible. We had Skylar Thomas on our show a couple weeks ago, and I even said to Skylar, I said, did you know, that was shocked everybody. He goes, it shocked us. And he was on the team. They were shocked they won that game in Lawrence that year. So anything's possible. Then Baylor at home, which, you know, certainly is not going to be easy, but, you know, you feel good when you're at home. And at TCU and in Oklahoma at home, which you should be okay there. I mean, really, to me, it comes down to, and I know Baylor's going to not be easy, and hopefully K-State stays healthy. But let's say that there's no more injuries, that they have what they have. Jada may or may not be back for some of those games. How would you handicap the rest of the race here in regards to the schedule? Oklahoma State, Baylor, Oklahoma at home, at KU, at TCU.
I mean, honestly, I feel pretty comfortable saying 4-1. Mm-hmm. I don't think that they will beat KU and Lawrence. I think they're capable of it. And like you just mentioned, you never know, because the fact that Jim Woldridge did do it means anybody can do it. But I just don't think that they can get that. I think KU is playing really well right now. And if they get that win on Saturday in Lubbock, that's going to be just a bear to come back to and play KU and Lawrence. So I don't think that they'll win that game. but I'd gladly be proven wrong. The rest of the games are very winnable, and honestly, they should win.
Mm-hmm.
I thought K-State played horrible against TCU and Manhattan, and they still won by 10, I think. So that's the only game on the schedule that I look at and go, ugh, I'm a little uneasy about, because outside of the KU game, because it's in Fort Worth, and you know, we've seen teams go into Fort Worth and absolutely smack TCU, and then we've seen team like KU come in there and TCU honestly should have won that game. So you never know what TCU team you're going to get down there. I think they're going to be in quite a fight, but I think that K-State absolutely can and probably should go 4-1 over these last five, and you know, that puts you at 21-7, and you're doing the math real quick. You're 14-4 in the conference. I mean, that should win you a share. It's not outright. I said 13-5. I thought would win it outright. That was kind of before K-State rattled off 9 straight wins. But I really thought 13-5 would win it outright. So I think if they go 14-4, they'll absolutely win at least a share. And 13-5 should get it done too. This is looking favorable. And like I said earlier, it's the most cliche thing in sports, but just worry about what you can control. Go out there and take care of business and just let the chips fall as they may, and you're going to win a Big 12 championship.
If K-State would go 14-4 and they lose at Kansas, that means Kansas would have to run the table. It also means everybody would have to run the table. If K-State go 4-1, 14-4 in the clubhouse, Tech, KU, Iowa State have to run the table. Tech and KU are going to play each other, so we know that's not going to happen for one of those teams. I still think it's going to come down to KU and K-State, but if Tech can win that game against KU coming up this weekend, then suddenly we're starting to talk about the Raiders, Red Raiders, as the challenge to K-State. And, of course, K-State is done playing Texas Tech, so they'll have to see what they can do. But it is nice to be at the top knowing that, hey, if we don't lose another game in the Big 12, we're the outright conference champion. It's a great place to be, and a place that, let's be honest, did any of us think before the season this is where K-State would be?
Absolutely not. No. I think people sipping on the purple Kool-Aid probably thought, you know, okay, we're going to win the Big 12. We're going to do this and that. And that's fine. You know, everybody kind of has those moments. And when you're pick number two in the conference, you're going to have those moments. But, I don't think anybody can definitively say they thought K-State was going to be in the position to win outright Big 12 championship. But here we are. And, man, I think you've got a great Saturday ahead of you. You know, you've got Oklahoma State at 3 p.m. if you're a K-State fan, and you either go to Bramlage and you watch that, or you watch it on TV. You get a bite to eat or something, and then you sit down in front of that TV and you watch Texas Tech and KU at night, because that is undoubtedly the biggest game just in terms of setting up next week and getting a really clear picture on what needs to happen. Then you're going to have an idea moving forward, and you'll feel a lot more comfortable knowing what you need to do to win a conference championship. Saturday is going to be a great day of basketball, no doubt.
The perfect weekend for K-State would be the following. You take care of business at home, obviously, against Oklahoma State. Iowa State's got to go to TCU. They just gave up 92 to TCU and Ames. If TCU can sweep Iowa State, which Iowa State's kind of up and down on the road, although they did win in Manhattan and look pretty good, but they rely on the three a lot, and they suddenly go cold. They can lose to anybody in this conference. They can beat anybody in this conference. And then you cheer for Texas Tech to beat KU. That's the perfect weekend for K-State, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. And it allows you to have some leeway, I guess. You know, obviously, you just keep winning. But I think if KU comes into Manhattan or comes into Lawrence on Monday, fresh off a win in Lubbock, K-State's lead is only half a game or whatever, the pressure's on.
Yes.
But if KU loses to Tech, I think you can play a little bit more loose, a little bit more relaxed, and probably play a better game overall.
I agree with you. All right, time for the off-the-wall question, Riley. My family and I, we went and saw the Lego Movie Part 2, or they say Lego Movie 2, the second part. If you've seen these movies, you would kind of get that joke. And so it got me to thinking in regards to some of these animated movies that you go and see, and I see probably more than you do, Riley, because I have 3 kids and everything else. As far as I know, you don't have any children.
No, I don't.
What cartoon character or animated character do you identify with the most?
Oh, wow. That's a good one.
For me, it's Batman, a Lego Movie. That guy's so cool with the killer abs. That's so me. That's so me.
Oh, yeah. That sounds like it fits your personality without a doubt.
I'm Batman. look at my abs.
Oh, man.
You can't see my abs, that's for sure.
I think I would probably have to say, man, that's a really, really tough question. I watch Family Guy and Simpsons and things like that, and I think that like if you've ever seen Family Guy, like I feel like at times I have the personality of a Brian Griffin, where like I think that I'm pretty smart about something, and then I look like an idiot because something doesn't exactly play out like I thought it would. That off the top of my head, that seems like a pretty good comparison, I think.
Brian Griffin. All right, I got you. I like that. All right,
I need time to study that one. Okay. That's a tough one. I got to give that one to you. That's a pretty tough question.
Well, thank you. It is completely off the wall. That's why we called that. I tell you what, you can come back next week and tell me if you come up with a better answer, all right? I'll make a note to revisit it and see if you change your mind.
I will probably forget in the next hour.
Exactly. I was going to say, I'm sure this is very important in the top of your priority list here between now and, of course, next Tuesday. Oh, yeah, there's a couple basketball games, including the Sunflower Showdown between now and then. Okay, so what are you working on right now on the website? And for subscribers out there, what can they learn about and what are you working on?
Yeah, we got all of our post-game stuff is actually on the site right now. You know, all the just kind of reactions from the game, quotes, media reactions, which is a really fun story I like to do, and that's actually free. So we've got a lot of free stuff on the site right at this moment, because a lot of our post-game stuff is free with some VIP mixed in, so that's up there. You can read that. I've got an update on K-State's bracketology seedings firing off in about an hour from now, and later this afternoon I've got a pretty neat feature on something I've been working on for a while that I'm excited to get out there. So, yeah, get on over there, read the free stuff, get a subscription if you're not and you want to read the VIP stuff. So, plenty of good stuff coming, and we're really starting to heat up here with postseason right around the corner.
Well, keep up the fantastic work. It's only going to get more and more exciting. Thanks for the time as always. We'll talk to you next Tuesday and recap the second part of the Sunflower Showdown with you.
You betcha. Looking forward to it.
Take care. Riley Gates, our Wildcat Insider, brought to you each and every Tuesday here on the Sports Ticket by Hanson Auction Realty in Beloit and Heineken Electric Residential and Commercial Electric Service Company.